Hi, this is Amanda. I'm Cat Content only on Twitter, or you may know me from Cena's feed. I've been on his podcast a few times. I also have a podcast of my own that I'd like for you to check out. It's called Radio Free Amanda. It's on Spotify and Patreon, and you're about to listen to a preview of the latest episode. It's a really good one with journalist Ben Norton, and we have a great discussion about the information warfare that the U.S. is waging in light of the Ukraine war. We not only talk about that, but also the strategy of U.S. media attacking anti-imperialist voices who oppose NATO's involvement. But we also situate it within a larger history of the state isolating anti-war voices from public debate and disciplining the left into adopting a pro-war position. As we mentioned in this clip, the CIA during the Cold War created what was called a compatible left or a non-communist left that was allowed to exist so long as it didn't oppose any sort of threat to U.S. interests. And what we're seeing today is a continuation of that strategy. So if you like the preview, I hope you consider subscribing to the podcast, which you can do on Spotify or at Patreon at patreon.com/radiofreeamanda. All right, so here's the clip.
Or I should stress that it's not just anti-imperialists who are correctly referring to this as a proxy war. We've seen many members of U.S. Congress openly refer to it as a proxy war. We've seen the Defense Secretary, Lloyd Austin, a former Raytheon board member, also say that the U.S. goal is to weaken Russia. And we saw that the former State Department official who was instrumental in the Iraq War, Elliot Cohen, who worked with Condoleezza Rice, he published an article in The Atlantic magazine, The Reliable Voice of the CIA and NATO, boasting that the U.S. and NATO are waging a proxy war on Russia via Ukraine. And he said that we should flood Ukraine with weapons. He used the term flood. So another thing to keep in mind here is that not only is this a proxy war, but when the U.S. is spending these tens of billions of dollars of weapons, that's also just a U.S. government subsidy straight to the military-industrial complex, which is one of the only things the U.S. economy produces anymore, is weapons and military equipment, because the U.S. outsourced its production to the global south to super exploit labor. So pretty much all of the U.S. economy, if it's not the service sector, is what economist Michael Hudson refers to as the fire sector, finance, insurance, and real estate, the military-industrial complex, and fossil fuel extraction. That's basically all of, and then, you know, horrible Hollywood movies. Like, that's all that the U.S. economy has left anymore. And so the U.S. government says, okay, we're going to spend billions of dollars helping to support Ukraine. But of course, if you read it more carefully, that money is going straight to U.S. military contractors who are just taking all of that money directly from the U.S. government, and it's going into private pockets. And it's just a yet another massive wealth transfer into the U.S. capitalist class. And of course, a lot of that money, I mean, it technically comes from taxes, or it just comes from money that the U.S. government creates, which leads to inflation and debt. So, I mean, the U.S. government continues to have this massive policy of significant wealth transfer from the working class and the state to the capitalist class, which it's continued to do for many decades. It has nothing to do with even caring about Ukrainian lives. Ukrainians are just the cannon fodder for U.S. empire. So it's just cynical and disgusting.
Yeah. Well, one of the more ridiculous things that have come out of the invasion is this mainstreaming of the word tanky, which you kind of touched upon a few minutes ago. I remember in January, this wasn't covering Ukraine, but The Nation came out with an article called What the Western Left Should Do About China. And in this article, they sort of criticized what they called an online army of tankies who supposedly have become apologists for authoritarian China. And this rhetoric has really escalated since the Ukraine war. And now we have The Intercept, New York Magazine, and then Daily Beast talking about tankies. So in that Daily Beast article that we talked about earlier, where they were talking about you and Lee Camp, the author writes, "In left-wing circles, there's a group derisively referred to as tankies. This patois refers to a minority who support authoritarianism, defend dictators, and deny human rights abuses. In my experience, they are a small clique, even among the far left, and are often held in contempt. yet they are obnoxiously loud on social media and are starting to gain a following. But this kind of disciplining of the anti-imperialist left isn't a new phenomenon. And you've pointed this out in articles and like some recent videos that you've done. And you've talked a bit about the parallels of this happening during the Cold War when the CIA created what it called a compatible left or a non-communist left. And I see that's what is going on here. They're sort of disciplining the left into taking this pro-war position into becoming a compatible left that doesn't really pose any sort of threat to U.S. foreign policy. So a left can exist as long as it doesn't pose any sort of threat to U.S. hegemony. But imperialism or anti-imperialism has been an issue that the state has historically used to create division among the Western left. So can you talk a little bit about what went on during that time, during the Cold War, from the halls of academia to the CIA creating, you know, organizations like the Congress for Cultural Freedom?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I think it's so important to understand this history. And I'll get to that in 1 second. I just want to say briefly on the Nation article, this ridiculous diatribe. We should keep in mind this guy, David Kalyan, he's just a straight up Democratic mm-hmm. Party operative. And he's part of that group with Sean McElwee, if you remember him, which were these people, they are part of an apparatus that exists to try to use left wing rhetoric and claim they're socialist and wear like, you know, Sean McElwee, this Democratic Party operative, used to like wear this hat that it was like seize the memes of production or whatever. Like they use like this dumb millennial Marxist watered down rhetoric, but then all they do is exist to try to bring leftists into the Democratic Party. And David Kalyan is a classic example of that. He is a strong supporter of Obama. During the Obama administration, he was one of Obama's biggest so-called left-wing foreign policy supporters. And also, he was a huge yes. Russiagater, and he's made his name as like why socialists need to take Russiagate seriously. He wrote an article in The Guardian about why socialists are not taking Russiagate seriously enough. And he accused the Green Party of being a Russian operation. I mean, just this guy, he's part of that apparatus specifically, not only of the kind of first Cold War style compatible left, but straight mm-hmm. up the Democratic Party. But and also the accusation levied against me and others that we're sympathetic to or that we're whatever authoritarian China, I have no problem in saying that China has done a lot of great things that we should admire and learn from. Like, I'm not afraid of saying that. Like, they make it. I'm not just sympathetic to Venezuela and Nicaragua and Cuba. I support Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba. And I hope people take this clip. Like, I deeply support them. Like, it's not like a bad thing. Like, socialists should support these projects. And like, China built in 2021 more renewable energy infrastructure than all other countries on Earth in 5 years combined. China has lifted 800 million people out of poverty and ended extreme poverty. China is doing more to combat climate change than any other country on Earth. China has done so many things helping countries in the global South. I mean, so yeah, I'm not afraid of being accused of being sympathetic to the People's Republic of China or something. It's nonsense. I mean, but anyway, aside from that,
the thing is, we're so inundated with anti-China propaganda that any sort of nice or good thing that you say about China automatically paints you as a China apologist. Like, you could have very legitimate critiques about China, but the second that you say something good about China, you're suddenly like paid by the CPC or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course there's legitimate critiques of China. Absolutely. I think no one even who's accused of like us of being apologists or whatever. I mean, I'm part of this group, Friends of Socialist China. Like, we all have criticisms, but like, I have no problem saying I don't care if people call me, I'm an apologist for the People's Republic of China. Like, they're apologists for the authoritarian regime in the United States that has 25% of the world's prisoners and 5% of the global population, that has murdered millions of people since 9/11, that has sanctions on over a quarter of the global population, that was built on genocidal ethnic cleansing and slavery. I mean, they're apologists for that. So I'll play that game. The people who call me an Assadist and an apologist, blah, 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 well, they're apologists for Al-Qaeda and ISIS. I can play that game. Like, I'm just like I'm just like so tired of that. But anyway, so in to answer your question about the compatible left, right? We need to understand this history. It's so crucial. We have to understand that when we're talking about manufacturing consent, you know, the famous book by Edward Herman, the first author, and then also Noam Chomsky, the second author, and the fact that Edward Herman was erased from history is an example of manufacturing consent on the left, because he was too anti-imperialist, unlike Chomsky. So he was professionally, you know, blacklisted. But anyway, when you go back and look at manufacturing consent, manufacturing consent is largely targeting the left. I mean, I think we really need to understand that. The U.S. government doesn't need to manufacture consent for conservatives to support a war on communism and socialism. They support that. They want that war to be accelerated. Manufacturing consent is largely targeting liberal Americans, progressive-minded people, young, impressionable radicals who are new to politics. Those are the targets of manufacturing consent. And if you look at the propaganda, it is largely targeting the left. And it's these kinds of these left-punching articles with this condescending rhetoric about how the left needs to take these things more seriously and blah, blah, blah. And when you look at what they're saying, it's always the left needs to be more in line with U.S. imperialism and the Democratic Party by extension. And you can be a socialist as long as your socialism ends at the U.S. border. You can say you want healthcare and education. Hey, you can even say that you want to nationalize the communication infrastructure and the power grid, and you want, you know, state-owned public transportation. That's fine. We'll allow you to operate within, you know, maybe the leftmost wing of Democratic Party circles. But when you start speaking about U.S. imperialism, that's where you're going to start facing trouble. You can operate even within mainstream media, but when you start speaking about imperialism, that's where you start facing issues. So you have like a few token so-called socialists who are allowed to write, like Liz Brunig, who's allowed to write because she'll like defend abolishing abortion, basically. I mean, she says she's whatever. That's a whole other thing. But she says she's a socialist, but never, ever, ever talks about imperialism. Or her husband, Matt Brunig, who's also like involved in these like DC think tank circles, but never talks about imperialism. And on the contrary, praises Norway and says Norway is more socialist than Cuba and Norway is more socialist than Venezuela. Even though Norway is part of NATO, Norway was involved in destroying the state of Libya and bombing Libya. So that's their brand of so-called socialism that's allowed. That's the compatible left, right? And this goes back to the CIA's concerted strategy during the first Cold War. And some of the most prominent names in the history of the U.S. left have been people who have been willingly or unwittingly supported by the CIA. So specifically, the godmother of bourgeois white feminism, Gloria Steinem, was a literal CIA agent. That is not a crazy conspiracy theory. There is video evidence of her talking about it. You can find it on YouTube, saying how the CIA is a great progressive organization. Listen to what she says. The CIA is a progressive organization. Now, if you're in the global South and the CIA overthrew your progressive government and installed a fascist military dictatorship that murdered and tortured and disappeared your friends and family for being progressives, of course, that might come as a surprise to you. But once again, it shows the CIA's strategy of targeting progressives who are anti-communist and what it called the non-communist left and also the compatible left. So there's a brilliant book about this called The Cultural Cold War by Francis Stoner Saunders, who is a mainstream journalist and historian. There's another really good book about this by Joel Whitney called Finks, F-I-N-K-S. And there's good research on this by friend and comrade, great researcher, Gabriel Rockhill, who's also working on a book about this, specifically focusing on philosophy and social theory and critical theory in academia and, you know, like these like anti-communist supposed left-wing thinkers like Foucault and many others. So the point is that there has been literally billions, if not trillions of dollars invested in supporting an anti-imperialist left, a left that is antagonistic to anti-imperialism, that is, if not anti-communist, at least antagonistic to communists. You could say the CIA said non-communist. I would say anti-communist left and an anti-imperialist left. And if people think that that policy does not continue today, I'm sorry, they're high. And how does it continue? I mean, there's a few ways it continues. First of all, we should keep in mind that as part of that apparatus I was talking about, you mentioned the Congress for Cultural Freedom. This was created by the CIA as a way to fund left-wing organizations, including left-wing publications like the Partisan Review and other socialist magazines that were anti-communist and pro-imperialist. Also, musicians, artists, including Jackson Pollock was a beneficiary of this program. Famous composers like Bernstein, who did West Side Story, and writers, including, unfortunately, we have to admit, including some major figures in the civil rights movement and major black writers who were you know, left sympathetic, but who were anti-communists involved in the civil rights movement, and including Bayard Rustin himself. Bayard Rustin is not as well known, although the Obamas are trying to create, their production company is funding a Netflix biopic, which is going to whitewash Bayard Rustin, who was a civil rights activist who was also gay. And he became later in his life a full-on neoconservative who supported Ronald Reagan and was a founder of this group called Black Americans for Israel, strongly supported Israel. And anyway, Bayard Rustin was a CIA agent. He also convinced MLK Jr. to adopt nonviolence as a strategy because Bayard Rustin was deeply against Malcolm X because Malcolm X was an anti-imperialist and actually believed in black liberation. So Bayard Rustin was a literal CIA agent. And later on, he became a leader of Social Democrats USA, which split off of the Socialist Party of America. And anyway, the point is that he was also part of this apparatus of the Congress for Cultural Freedom. And today, it continues in the form of large billionaire-funded foundations. So also as part of that apparatus that the CIA backed was the Ford Foundation, founded by the family of former Nazi Henry Ford, billionaire oligarch and also Nazi who received major awards from Nazi Germany and Hitler himself. Also the Rockefeller Foundation and the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, and a name you're not allowed to mention because you get smeared as an anti-Semite, but billionaire CIA-backed oligarch George Soros and his Open Society Foundations. Soros, yes, there are right-wing anti-Semitic conspiracies about him. I'm not saying he's uniquely evil. All billionaires are evil, but he is also a billionaire, and he's very influential and involved in these political circles. He's been involved in CIA networks going back to the first Cold War, in which he created the Open Society Foundation as a CIA front to help fund organizations that were working within the former Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc to overthrow the Soviet Union, the People's Republic of Poland, and other countries in Eastern Europe. And today, those big foundations, Ford, Rockefeller, and Open Society, are very active, spending billions of dollars per year in trying to co-opt the left. Just as we talk about the nonprofit industrial complex, the nonprofit industrial complex has its origins in the Congress for Cultural Freedom and the CIA, with this infrastructure of working hand in glove with the CIA to try to co-opt the left and create a respectable anti-communist and pro-imperialist.